The Mad Tech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by Exchange Wire.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Exchange Wire Mad Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Anne-Marie Sheedy, Chief Revenue Officer at Exchange Wire, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Marvin Harrison, Chief Vision Officer at Beloved. Hello, Marvin.
Hi, how are you doing? Thank you so much for having me.
Great, pleasure to have you. And also Kieran O'Kane, CSO and co-founder of Exchange Wire. Hello, Kieran.
Hello, Anne-Marie. Thanks for allowing me back onto the podcast.
It's nothing to do with me. You're always welcome.
I know, I'm on the bench, like a world-class striker sitting on the bench, coming on, scoring a Gary Lineker-esque goal in the 90th minute every time.
You are showing your age just a tiny bit with that reference, but I'm with you.
Well, without further ado, we're going to crack on and we're going to start with the first story, which is from the Media Leader. And the headline is North America to shed 10 million pay TV subscribers by 2029. So this story is, according to a new study, North America will lose almost 10 million pay TV subscribers in 2029. And in 2024, digital TV research forecasts US subscribers to drop by 3.9 million to 56.3 million. Marvin, with that in taking that into consideration, what are the potential ramifications, do you think, or opportunities of this for advertisers?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that advertisers are always nimble and always looking for new ways to connect to audiences. But the hardest part is, where do you find trusted audiences and relationships? So although there will be a decrease in TV, unless there is, you know, responsible advertising space online available at scale, there will always be a desire just to go to the hard, old-fashioned TV audiences. So, if I think about myself, if I was media planning, you know, I would like to keep 60% of my budgets in much more traditional places. And then I'll do 20% online, and I'll keep a portion of that back for new platforms and new spaces. So I don't see a massive shutdown of advertisers and moving away from that platform, because it's just so trusted. Like, you just know what you're getting way more than you traditionally would do with anywhere else. And you know, we've looked at bubbles that have occurred online in the digital space and more mobile focused, and it just never really holds up for the long term in terms of the attention economy. So I don't think there'll be a huge drop off and a huge shift. If from the advertiser's point of view, I think it would be a wait and see about how everything responds. But I'm also really present to, if you think about any of the trends where there has been huge shifts in momentum, the thing that gets predicted, you know, we go back to the year 2000, where we predicted that everything's going to shut down because no one's going to figure out how to do zeros or nines. What actually happens versus the predictions are always vastly different. And also, much of the things that will be important in 2029 probably haven't really even been developed yet. So I'm not predicting a huge shift in advertising based on that data.
Interesting. Kieran, would you agree or disagree with that?
I totally agree with that. I think this gets redistributed elsewhere, right? So, like, I suspect this is the sort of collapse of the sort of linear pay TV market in the US that's been long sort of predicted. Like, cord cutters are just cutting cords longer, but where one cord disappears, another one pops up, you know, like a giant haze sort of monster. Like, I just listened to a podcast this morning, coincidentally, from Next in Media. Mike Shields was interviewing this guy who does like a creator newsletter. And he was talking about how YouTube subs have gone absolutely ballistic in terms of growth. And that, you know, YouTube, like a lot of people now are kind of almost rebundling the bundle on YouTube, because what they're doing is like they're bringing all the disparate sort of channels they had or that you have now or paid for into one bundle. So like, it's a very US phenomenon, I think, as well. I mean, there was a fear, like, I remember, like, the likes of Scott Galloway predicting that this was the demise of, you know, advertising, and advertising was for poor people, which I found to be, like, a little bit, you know, from a man who has, like, a couple of hundred million wealth. Yeah, exactly. It's an embarrassing statement, really. But the reality is, like, think about it this way. YouTube, Netflix started off as a pure sub business. It is now deviating into advertising, similar to the other streaming platforms. They've gone pure sub, now ads in there as well. So like it's what Marvin said, like the money just shifts around, right? Mm. Like, so the pay TV thing may not be a thing, but the next generation, like, nothing changes around TV. TV's TV, right? It's still going to be like the top of the funnel. It's still going to be really important in the marketing plan. And Marvin's right about trusted sources, right? Netflix is going to be trusted source. Disney's going to be a trusted source. And to
Amazon
a certain
will be
extent,
a trusted source.
Amazon as well. And to a and to a certain extent, YouTube subscriptions might be a trusted source, right? There's a lot of crap and a lot of dangerous crap from an advertiser's point of view, brand safety on YouTube. And it is a bit of a wild west, let's be honest here. But I think this is just a natural end to, but it's just like it collapses and then is rebuilt. Paid TV collapses and then rebuilt in another form.
Well, there's too much rich content and IP owned by a small group of companies. And what will end up happening is just a series of consolidations will happen because a lot of people came out of the gate. I don't remember if you remember, there was like a 5-minute video platform that launched in COVID.
A
huge valuation and then died.
Yeah, they collapsed. What was the name for them?
It's not 2B, it's something like that. But yeah. I think that the answer is always going to constantly be tried to be evolved. How do you gain attention? And the attention economy has shifted again, and different things will really move people. But really, it's going to go to really niche TV. People want really high quality niche programming that speaks to their very specific interests. And a lot of TV is still going to a sort of general place, trying to make hit IP that they can sell 50 million times and make a theme park out of. And unfortunately, people are just kind of out of that zone. So the quicker you understand that I want to understand how to knit with merino wool, and I want a merino wool knitting show, you'll understand that actually you will get a nice core audience and you can own that relationship. The consolidation part is still to come. And many people who invested billions are going to find out that the value of their content is not really fitting.
Yeah,
I think you're right. I think it's about going where your audiences are. And that it leads us on nicely actually to the next story, which is from TechCrunch. And it's about how Reliance Disney India media merger to control 85% of streaming, half of TV audiences. So this is where the merger of Reliance and Disney will create an entity that captures 85% of the country's on-demand streaming service audience and about half of the TV viewers, posing bigger challenges to streaming giants such as Netflix and Amazon, these trusted sources that you were just talking about. The merger will have exclusive digital and broadcast rights to some of the key sporting events, such as the next 4 years of popular cricket tournament IPL, the FIFA World Cup, and Wimbledon. So, Kieran, I'm going to come to you on this first. How do you think this merger could impact the wider streaming landscape?
So it was Quibi, by the way. That was that short form video thing.
Quibi, there you go.
Yeah, Katzenborg. I remember that. It was an absolute disaster. this is a fascinating story, and I think it speaks more about the Indian market than the wider trend. Like, so this is not the first mega deal that was attempted. I think a couple of months ago there was a deal merged between Sony and Z Entertainment Enterprises for like $10 billion. And that was nearly went ahead, but didn't. It still could, because apparently it's gone to court because there's a breakup fee. Like, but I think this is interesting from an Indian media marketing point of view. Like, these are obviously like the deals between Disney, which is like a global business, but effectively it's an Indian first stream channel, right? It just shows that market is very dynamic. And I think like we're going to see huge growth in sort of like programmatic buying there around, you know, the CTV space potentially. Like, so I think this kind of like emboldens that market a little bit, like, and it speaks to the macro trends, I suppose, around that economy, that, you know, the middle class is getting bigger and bigger, and when the middle class gets bigger in economy, they consume more, and there's more GDP starts to rise, and there's more disposable income, so brands are more interested in those types of business. So, you know, this happening in that market is fascinating. From our own sort of like programmatic point of view, it could open up quite a lot of CTV inventory. It's almost kind of feeds into the previous story, because again, to Marvin's point, is like, where are brands going to put the money, right? And if linear TV or pay TV is kind of like on the wane, that money will just go to these new streaming platforms like this one. What's it being called? Is there a brand name for it, or is it just a... do they actually have a name for it? Right.
No, okay. I'm sure they'll probably have to wait for the actual competition to be announced.
Reedy. I like it.
Reedy Plus, obviously, you know. Yeah, plus
maybe,
on the
maybe
plus.
Desiance. I don't know, that doesn't make any sense. Desiance. It's terrible.
All right, before we go off on that,
I'm going to say dizzy, but it's fine.
That's why I don't work for an agency. My branding skills are rubbish, you know, so I could do a good logo, though.
Oh, you do love a logo. I can't deny that. But Marvin, how positive could this deal be for advertisers, do you think?
Look, I think it will probably mean that they're able to reach a large scope of audience. It means they'll be able to plan better. But I also just think about the anti-competitive nature of it. Like 85% is near on a monopoly. And so what that also then means is that the platform will be able to control the cost and the price of reaching those audiences much more aggressively. So it'll be great for the business, but I don't think it'll be great for advertisers. But, I don't know how many advertisers are watching by the penny, but I think their biggest, focus is making sure the audience that's reaching the right audiences at the right time with the right messages. I think I'm not a huge fan of anti-competitive sort of strategies. It really makes me feel uncomfortable. I feel like once you get over sort of 50-55% mark, you need to be able to have competitors between the 30-40% mark to be able to, make it competitive and make it realistic for everybody else to generate a business. So advertisers will be happy in the short term, but they could find themselves being absolutely price gouged by a monopoly.
That's a very valid point. I did read somewhere along the lines that there may be some antitrust scrutiny looming, and that there's been reports of potential losses of about $1.2 billion to $1.8 billion that may need to be absorbed due to some kind of fierce cricket rights bidding by rival companies. Yeah. So throw that in. How's that going to affect the pricing structure? I don't know, Kieran, if you've got anything to add.
Absolutely.
There. I mean, look, I think that the Indian government really wants national champions to be active in the market. So like the anti-competitive stuff, would probably be looked at, but probably swept aside because they say, well, it's better than having an American conglomerate like Netflix or Amazon sort of controlling the market. I still think that there will be other deals in the market that will probably even things out. I think that Z Entertainment and Sony deal may still happen. So, Marvin's right at that point about, having that sort of control over the streaming market, but it's still only 50% of the total view. I mean, there's still quite a lot of content consumed on mobile devices. Like India, obviously, is a reflection of the Southeast Asian market, which is very mobile first. So, and maybe that will be taken into account by whoever. I don't know what the anti-competitive sort of overlords are in India. What the government sort of departments look after that. I don't know how much of ad inventory will be on the. I imagine there's quite a bit because, they probably want to make money off both ends in terms of revenue, subs plus advertising.
I think also what
price
we have to
and power will be an issue.
In India is one of the biggest emerging markets, and at some point, I feel like they'll be one of the larger economies. And how they behave when they're growing will matter. It's really hard to break down monopolies once they've been granted consent. And so it's quite important that you govern those companies really early on to set a bit of a precedent. But again, we're always looking at it from our Western lens, but, I would love for that particular, for that not to go through. Give advertisers more choice and diversity in terms of who they can deal with, prevent monopolies.
Well, I don't know where we're going to go then when we look at the third story, which is from the BBC. And this is where we're talking about more music leaving TikTok over Universal Music Row. So apparently, there's handbags at dawn, but the The question here is, like, more music will be leaving TikTok following the video giant's row with Universal Music. The video titan says up to 30% of its songs deemed as popular could be lost. We won't ask what popular is, but, you know, or who these artists are. But however,
I feel like your popular is the Beatles.
Well, according to some industry experts, they estimate that up to 80% of all music on the platform could be muted due to split copyrights. And what I'd like us to kind of dive into here, Marvin, I'd like to start with you, is do you think Universal Music can resist keeping away from TikTok?
I think they can for now, because they own such a large vast, they are the largest rights holder in the world. And so it gives them a real leverage. So unlike with other platforms, there isn't necessarily an ownership share. So with Spotify, for example, the record labels own a share. So if they grow, the record labels are growing alongside them, and it's beneficial to allow it to be there. With TikTok being owned and being a Chinese business, it makes those type of things harder to do. And so it does create a bit of a sticking point in terms of, you know, how much leverage UMG actually have in this area. I believe that the publishing side of things is going to be removed also. And I think what we're talking about now is that if there are any UMG artists that are partially involved in any of the creation of music, then they're removing those rights also, which will then ineffectively, because, you know, the creative process of music doesn't necessarily happen alongside label lines. It's not to say I'm on Sony, you're on Warner, we can't write a song together. So we could find that disrupts a huge amount of the catalog. But for me, I think if I'm quite a platform first person, I enjoy the fact that music is available on TikTok. It's one of the first platforms that have kind of got it right in how to integrate music, but also Universal are breaking a lot of their artists on TikTok. So they can try and be hard about it, but at some point they may find themselves losing artists that they want to sign and work with, catalogs wanting to challenge them and their decision-making, because now they're trying to stop revenue being generated. You look at someone like Kate Bush, who last year went to number one in the charts again from trending on TikTok. Those catalog things are really valuable to everybody involved. And if those rights are not necessarily being used, many of the artists will start to push back and revolt and will want change. So it may not all be a smooth sailing for Universal, but I understand why they're doing it. They want much better revenue shares, but they can't bully the way they did with Spotify.
Well, that'd be good, right? Would you agree with that, Kieran?
I think platforms are just, they don't generally pay for content. Like, they are, you know, the great leeches of our time. Like, so, like, the fact that, you know, that this sort of music label is standing up to TikTok is a good sign. Well, it should be sort of adopted by other people, right? I don't use TikTok, so I have no idea how any of this works. But my sense is, like, you know, a tune is a tune, and if some idiot's dancing to some random tune, some death metal tune, as opposed to some quality tune, it sort of ruin the experience of the short form video. So I would say that Universe has got a strong hand to play here. I think, like, there's a bit of a face off. There'll be a negotiation. They'll sit down. They'll work it out. There'll be a deal done. I mean, like, it doesn't really help TikTok to have that kind of content off its platform, because people will just go to YouTube, or they go to, like, remember that, you know, Instagram Reels and YouTube are competitive with TikTok in many ways. So in many ways, they're competitive with both of them. So maybe that's sort of like the bargaining power here. But yeah, I think, like, if you've got content, you've got to figure out a way to protect that. You can't just let it be commoditized, because then you're commoditized as a business. So, you know, they have unique IP that they should defend very strongly. I mean, this sort of feeds into the conversation around, you know, publishers and AI, right? Like, you know, the New York Times sued OpenAI for, like, basically just, you know, taking their content, feeding their large language models, and then basically rolling out a product that kind of, like, was built on New York Times IP. So I think this is a sort of a broader sort of theme around, you know, content owners protecting their IP as best they can. And I totally agree about the distribution point. Marvin's pointing out, like that is a huge sort of plus for artists, right? But artists aren't getting as much money for their actual content themselves. Like, you know, they're making money off ticket sales and merchandise. But like, if you start devaluing music like that, like it just gets worse. At least with Spotify, you're getting some money,
Music is the most disrespected art form there is in the world. Films 100%. Have maintained value. Painting has maintained value. Any theater has maintained value. You can't go to the theater for less than 50 quid. So, you know, the fact that people have been pennies off for their music, and it, you know, TikTok paid out UMG $110 million annually for music that isn't necessarily going to generate any other additional revenue any other way. It's free money to them. So for them, they probably want more because the platform is generating about $18 billion, which is an absurd amount of money. They probably want a bigger piece of the pie. But it's just two large companies basically fighting over and pretending to be on behalf of the artists, because how much of that is the artist actually getting? The reality is, if you're an artist, you want to go viral on TikTok so you can go and do live shows and sell merchandise and sell products. You make more money from doing that than you would ever do from selling the rights to your songs. But that's not because of how TikTok pays, but that's because of how your contract is formed with Universal Music Group and all the other major labels. So it doesn't favor mass consumption of streams in a way. It doesn't reward you for increasing consumption. So I feel like this is just two huge companies putting their handbags down. I don't even like that sentiment. It feels weird, but like fighting over their own particular interests and not necessarily those of the artist.
Yeah, I think a bare knuckle dust up in a car park is probably a better sort of analogy there, like between the two.
Yeah, but at the level of money we're talking, I almost feel like insulted to make any form of working class regular person reference. It's billions of pounds being negotiated.
Yeah.
And how much of that goes to the artist as a collective, let alone artist.
It does sort of beg a bigger question around music rights and going forward, right? You say the record labels make a ton of money off owning the rights to music, right? And do the artists actually get value? I mean, you could argue that they don't, because, you know, if you look at Prince, he did 19 shows in a row in the UK. Do you remember that, like that run he had in London where he made a couple of million? He kind of had to do that because he wasn't making as much money off his amazing sort of collection of body of work of music. Like, so,
so he made that very accessible. I mean, I went and I think I paid 35 quid and I was, you know, a stone's throw away from him.
Yeah.
Whereas now you go, and that was at the O2 in, I don't know when the site was, but you go, I don't even go to places like the O2 anymore because you're in the gods and you pay an absolute fortune and you can't see the artist.
But it's a problem though, because we're getting a situation now where like the big artists are getting most of the money in terms of live shows, right? And then smaller artists are getting killed because small venues can't afford to run shows. I read an article at the weekend that some of the kind of smaller venues can actually make money because it doesn't work economically, which means that there's the smaller venues where an artist could make money or a starting artist can't do that. So there's this delta between, like, you know, the Taylor Swifts and then, you know, the big sort of uber stars and then all the rest of people. So maybe this is sort of indicative of this bust up between YouTube and the record company is indicative of a bigger problem in music rights and remuneration for artists. Maybe, I don't know how you fix that. There's been lots of people saying, could Spotify start an independent label? But no, they can't, because they would lose all the music they have already, sort of like rights, etc., on the platform.
No, but like, you know, other DSPs, they exist. So you're able to upload your music and do that privately. The relationship with the label still is that they've been able to dominate the relationship with distribution in such a way that nobody else can. Independent artists still feel like they need a label. So it is something to consider. And we've got to figure out how to develop. A much better relationship so they can get a much better revenue from, you know, the work that they're doing. UMG will always tell you that this is for the artists, but they've been doing contracts that are inequitable, you know, from the beginning of time. If you watch any music film, there's a relationship with the art label that is deeply frustrated and frictitious. And so it will pose questions, because if people can't get their music monetized and used so they can make their money in shows, they will start turning to the label to reject it.
We'll have to keep an eye and see what happens. But unfortunately, that means that we've actually run out of time for today's podcast. But I would like to thank you both for such energized contribution. Thank you, Marvin, for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It was brilliant. Really good to spend time with you both.
Likewise, Kieran, thanks for coming off the bench.
I enjoyed it.
Imaginary bench that you're on.
Well, yeah, the metaphorical bench.
Thank you for tuning in to the Exchange World MedTech Podcasts.